I was watching the F1 till about 11 o'clock at night, and I was just, Helen had come and sat down next to me, and I'd had my dessert, and I was just about going like this, and then I heard the commentator go, "Has Vettel got a problem?" Straight up, and I was like, "What?" Because I'd been saying to my sister, she was watching when Hamilton's tyre went, and I said to her, and I just went, my nephew fortunately was outside and the door shut, and I just went, she went, "What?" I went, "His tyre's gone." I went, "That is unbelievable. Why doesn't this ever happen to Red Bull? There's nothing mechanical about that. That's blind luck. That's a puncture." Obviously, that was the first one. I didn't realise it was going to be a continuing theme. Yeah. And I was like, "Why does nothing mechanical ever... this is luck. Why doesn't Red Bull ever get luck? Seb's just going to walk away with it." I went on a proper, proper rant. And then towards the end, it happened. And I was just like, to myself, I was like, Nicola, it's happened. Oh my God, this is the day. This is the moment. I was well happy. Yeah. It was amazing.
I've decided we're going to use that as the first part of the podcast. I'll just have to bleep it.
Like. I didn't realise you were recording.
Yeah, it's been recording. I love
that,
it.
Immense.
That summed up part of the feeling from the British Grand Prix.
Right.
A British Grand Prix that might have had a little bit going on. My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast. I'm going to open it up, guys. Do you want to talk about the race first, or do you want to talk about the tyres and all of the ensuing fallout?
I think if you get race out of the way...
Yeah, do race first, because actually there were some nice moments in the race. There were some good moments. No, not at all. Because if we do the tyres, then everything that we do about the race will be kind of, if it wasn't for that, and if it isn't that. But we'll talk about the positives that we took from the race, because there were a good few positives from the race. It was nice. It was a good race. You know, we do love Silverstone. Still one of my top five tracks.
You know what? I thought, I'm just going to try and learn the track a little bit. So I got out my old Formula One 2011 iPad game, mm-hmm. and I drove the track repeatedly.
Yeah?
And I really enjoyed it.
You should really upgrade and get a better version of the game.
I think it's the newest one. iPad. Is it 2011? It might be 12.
I've got the 2012 on an unnamed console that you plug into your television, because obviously we can't advertise, but we all know.
You probably can.
Okay, well, it's an Xbox. And I play the Xbox one, and that's very good, very, very, very enjoyable. But I do enjoy that with learning the tracks.
Going through comps. Yeah. It's even fun on an iPad.
I've stopped playing the F1 game on the Xbox because I got the 2011 one, and I'm about a third of the way through the season. I'm winning the World Championship with Rubens Barrichello. So... in a Williams.
Realistic.
Yeah,
in a Williams.
It's very realistic.
That is, of course, Dave Tillier and Perry Hamilton. I haven't even introduced you guys. It's been such an enthralling start.
I think my shouting about the British Grand Prix was probably introduction enough.
I think that's introduced you to everyone.
Yes.
Nico Rosberg won the British Grand Prix with Mercedes in fine style, but with a bit of help. Should this have been Lewis's win?
I think it should have been Webber's win. But you know, the Lewis is very unlucky with the whole tyre situation and the blowout and what have you. It by rights, you know, if he'd have carried on, then I imagine Lewis would have been ahead of Nico. But as the race played out, if we'd have just had one more lap, you know, I think we could have seen Webber on the top step again. And fortunately for Webber, the time just ran out.
Would Vettel not have been ahead of them all though? If there's to add one more if. His gearbox hadn't have gone.
Yeah, if buts and maybes are, you know...
You got to drive what's in front of you, and who drove what was in front of them to the best of their ability. I think Nico did great. I think Webber had a shocking start, and if he'd actually had a better start, maybe he'd have been up there. But if he'd had a better start... maybe he'd have been more involved in some kind of tyre problems, or who knows? You know,
it wasn't, according to Webber, it wasn't his fault. He came on the radio midway through the race and said, "Come on, guys, we practiced this. Why was my start not, you know?"
He got asked about it in the post-race press conference as well, and it was a little bit more even-handed. I think he'd obviously had a pretty good start in the last two races, but before that, he'd had all kinds of issues.
But we know starting has never been Webber's strong point. You know, there are things in the world you can put money on. Webber is not a strong starter. Fernando Alonso goes off the line like a rocket. They are the two things that you know. However, Fernando is completely eclipsed by Felipe this race. Felipe's start was the stuff of legend this time round. I reckon I got
a bit confused.
Yeah, I think he must have just stuck some Velcro under his tyres so that he had literally no spin and just went. It was amazingly good.
I thought Alonso had got a different coloured helmet.
Maybe this was the problem. If you had a good start, then your tyres gave way after about between 8 and 16
lap 8, that was a little conspiracy that Michael stumbled upon.
I honestly thought when I saw the replay, Felipe going off, I thought, oh, it's Felipe again, you know. He's obviously had three crashes in three practice sessions and then spins off the track, but then obviously it's not his fault. You know, he wasn't doing anything wrong. The car gave way underneath him.
Indeed. Assuming that Lewis had a great start and it was just developing so fascinatingly between him and whether Vettel would close him down. Nico obviously came through at the end. They got some good healthy points, Nico and Lewis. They're obviously a long way behind Seb, but are Mercedes genuine contenders now?
They're ahead of Ferrari now, aren't they? So, yeah, I think...
Well, they're only behind Red Bull, you'd probably argue.
Yeah. I think they've obviously got over that race, the issues they had during the race. Well, they've been quick on a Saturday for a long, long time, but they now seem to be able to hold that up on a Sunday. They're not blindingly quick, but they're enough to capitalise on their great qualifying form. So if they carry on the way they're going, I don't know whether or not championship contender is up there, because they've had that poor start and Seb is a little bit ahead. But we'll have to wait and see.
They could certainly be in talk for the constructors, I think, depending on how Red Bull are going forward. We know Red Bull want to win, so the fact that Webber's decided to leave Formula 1 next season is not going to make any difference in the way that they approach the season with him. They're still going to want to put him on the top step and get as many points as they can. They're not going to consign it to sort of the end just yet. But, we are talking about some serious... Getting in front and controlling the pace, you know, racers have been doing that for years. It's just a case of that they've been... it's slightly less tense when they did it. Now it's tense purely because the Mercedes have to manage their tyres, they have to manage the car, and they have to manage the lead, which means they can't go shooting off into the distance and let everyone else battle for places behind them. And that was the way that people used to secure their victories. But now, you know, that's just a different kind of controlling the pace. Now they control the pace differently, but it's still controlling the pace. I mean, I have to say, I thought Monaco was an anomaly. I thought Monaco was, well, they had to keep people behind them because... you can't pass. You know, it's Monaco. It is what it is. Silverstone, there's plenty of opportunities to pass. You know, you've got two straights. You've got one of the nicest straights on the calendar with the Hangar Straight. Absolutely beautiful piece of track. And plenty of room to pass there. Some good corners where you can make some nice moves as well. And they did a great job because, as we know, you know, catching is one thing, passing is another. So as DT quite rightly says, if you can transfer just a little bit more of that Saturday pace over into Sunday, enough to keep people behind you and enough to not hit the cliff 5-6 laps earlier than everyone else, you know, 1 or 2 laps earlier than everyone else, now you're starting to talk serious business.
And I think you talk about Webber leaving Formula 1, I think I have a sneaky suspicion that Webber is going to be awesome for the rest of the season.
Well, he bounced around, I think, the circuit from the moment it came out. He was a happy, contented fellow. He looked a little bit mischievous, and the fact that he was able to break it and Christian Horner had about a minute's notice or something on the fact that it was going to be announced.
Yeah, it's all a bit confusing, really, because Red Bull are actually sponsoring him in his endurance racing, so they obviously knew about it. Helmut Marko apparently was briefed long before.
I can't imagine Helmut would have had a problem with it, though.
No.
Would he?
Mateschitz was sort of, I think, the guy that Mark Webber had been talking to a lot about it all. I mean, I suppose it may just have been that Horner hadn't been told there was going to be an announcement, not that the whole thing wasn't actually going to happen. But, are we expecting big things now? I mean, the way Webber took on Silverstone on Sunday was a bit like last year, really, wasn't it? Very similar. He pushed it and just maybe fell a lap short this time.
He is a Silverstone master, you know, he does very well there. And I just have this odd gut feeling that because the weight has been lifted, because he's not going to care quite so much. You know, he'll still want to get points, but he's not going to have that pressure because he's got nothing left to prove. He's got nothing to fight for.
He's got no ties, and that's the thing, isn't it? There's nothing of him. He's not under the cosh of having to come back and deal with repercussions next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, so multi-21, no way. He's going to do what he wants to do. Yeah. What are they going to do? They didn't do anything to Seb. What are they going to do to him? Look for a new driver for next year? Tough, I'll take that option away from you. I'll walk away on my own terms. And now I'm going to go out there and I'm going to race and I'm going to show you that you've made not a huge mistake, because obviously Seb's a three-time world champion, but I'm going to show you that I've got years of racing left in me and you've made the mistake of shooting that in the foot.
And that they'll miss him, probably. He'd love to prove that. I mean, Formula One's going to miss him, for sure. What a character, what a guy Mark Webber is. Who, of course, started his single-seater career at Attleborough for Van Diemen in the area. So he's a Norfolk boy.
He's honorary, a local lad.
Honorary Norfolk boy.
Honorary Norfolk.
We'll claim anything in these parts.
Exactly. We'll tweet him. We'll tweet him with the F1 podcast 3DP. I'm sure he listens. You can get that in Germany, can't you? That's where he'll be soon, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, you get it online.
Well, he lives near Silverstone, and he loves it here.
Yeah, exactly. Local lad. We'll adopt
him. Unlike the rest of the Formula One drivers who something off to Monaco and Switzerland.
And spin off, is that what you meant? They spin off?
Yeah. Naff off. Mine was beginning with B, but there we go.
It is time for this.
You didn't sound sure then.
It's the EDP F1 Pit Stops, brought to you by David Tillier's impression of a pit stop, as always, our favourite. I was going to start talking about Webber, but we've already sort of addressed it. It does leave a seat, though, of course, which was the primary talking point, aside and away from tyres, for most of the weekend. Who would you like to give it to?
Who would I like to give it to, or who do I think they'll give it to?
Well, you can give me both, if you wish.
Okay. I would like them to give it to someone like Kimi, who could challenge for the title and not give Seb such an easy ride. They will give it to someone who will sit and guard Seb's rear so that they can push Seb for the title. Because I think they found, by having someone as fiery and competitive as Mark Webber, that, yes, he wins them races, but actually, if you're going to choose who can win your race, you're going to choose always your championship contender. I think they'll go for a setup similar to you see at Ferrari, where Fernando's the unquestioned number one and Felipe's his gunner. And Felipe seems to have matured into that role a little bit more now, and I think he realises what he's got when he's got a good car underneath him. I think they'll look to someone, which is why when they were bandying around Daniel Ricciardo's name, I didn't think that was too far-fetched. And I swear to God, DT, if you say Charles Peake, I'm done.
It's I love the British Grand Prix weekend, A, because I get to go through work, which is very, and it's such a difference to actually be there and look at the whites of these guys' eyes when you're interviewing them and in on the press conferences. Kimi was asked repeatedly about Red Bull, of course, on Thursday, and I think he cut a figure that was, yes, clearly if someone comes along, and they'd already been chatting, if they do put the contract in front of me, I think he would take that. Mm. And then when Vettel was asked the same question, it was much more guarded. He was like, yes, he's my friend, but don't know if that would really work. No, you don't really have friends in Formula One, and he was a lot of. And the guys, though he was playing it down, he's clearly going to have a say in who's driving next to him next year. And I don't think he would really want Kimi next to him.
No.
And just finally, Webber on talking to the BBC after the race. I think he was sitting next to Daniel Ricciardo at the time, but I think he almost said he was in pole position to get the seat, and he would probably have an idea about that.
I think Ricciardo's got a good chance. I think he impressed more and has been impressing more, I think, lately than Verne overall. And I think he's definitely the best Red Bull rookie driver available to them at the moment. They, you know, Kimi is a bit of a hot prospect for them at the moment. I know Christian Horner wants him to come in. That he would be great for them because he is a very, very quick driver. And there's a part of me that wants him to stay at Lotus, but there's a part of me that wants him to go and thrash Vettel. I want him to go and put Vettel in his place, you know, and squash his dreams.
Which would not happen.
Who knows about that? I mean, it could. I think it would be given free rein. You know, everyone starts equal. Everyone starts on zero at the beginning of the season. First race of the season, everyone's on zero, so everyone's got a chance to assert themselves. Kimi goes out there and wins that first race. Okay, you've got the leg up. Fine. If you're in a clear position to win the race, we'll help. But if Seb's out, you know, and you're two, three places behind, we're not going to get him to back everyone up at the next race. three, four races down the line, then you look at how far that person is ahead. And if Kimi's made stake the claim three, four races in, then he's got a very solid lead over Vettel. I would see Red Bull putting all their weight behind it, because ultimately Red Bull want championships. Red Bull have not got into this business to, oh, let's take Sebastian Vettel and make him a seven-time, eight-time, nine-time world champion. Red Bull have turned around and gone, let's have 10 world championship drivers, and I don't give a monkey's if they've all got different names. We want 10 world championship drivers. We want 10 team constructor world championships. That's why, I don't know if 10 is the right number, but you understand what I'm saying. That's what Red Bull are after. It's not about being a vehicle, pun intended, for Sebastian Vettel. It's about being a vehicle for a championship, and that's what they're after. So whoever they get in has to stake their claim. But I'll give you a dark horse. Adrian Sutil. Compatriot of Sebastian Vettel. So, you know, they've known each other, they've raced together for a while. He's come back out of nowhere this year and really blown people away in their expectations. He's put in a good enough drive so far this year at Force India so that people will, you know, have not been expecting that. And he's almost given himself a sort of free agent prospect where he's going to hit the open market maybe, or be relevant because he was brought in with little fanfare by Force India. If he's on a longer contract, wouldn't be that much for Red Bull to buy him out. And he's a quick driver, he's a young driver, and he, at the moment, can have no aspirations to walk in and take over that team. And I think he would be a very good choice. But if you do that, what's the point of having an academy team like a Toro Rosso?
Well, yeah, that's the other argument, I suppose, isn't it?
I think it'll be Ricardo, Vern, or Kimi. I don't think they'll look outside that pond. Just looking at the way that they've done things in the past and the way they run things, I think, like you say, what is the point of having an academy team if you don't actually use them for something, you know?
Interesting. Well, we'll bring it back to Kimi, shall we? Lotus, I mean, kind of mucked it up, really, didn't they, for him? He was running second when the second safety car came out. Didn't pit, which it seemed to be Kimi suggesting that was the team's call. Which he then questioned, and by which time it was too late.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it could have ended up better for him if he'd have pitted. It worked for Alonso, and Alonso ended up, he was third, and was he third or fourth, and then ended up eighth. But actually, in reality, Kimi could have pitted and ended up 15th, the way that the traffic was. So I don't know what the window looked like for Kimi coming in, so it could have, that could have been the best decision that they could have made, and they could have hoped for the best, or, you know, they could have made a balls up. But ultimately, it's F1, isn't it?
Yeah, the way it goes.
Yeah,
but probably not ideal for
it's the way the Lotus crumbles.
Lotus don't really want to be annoying Kimi, do they?
No, I think they'll only hold on to him by default. I think
it was a suggestion he doesn't have to stay in Formula 1.
Yeah. No, but
he has
contract
next year.
No, but why did he come back? He wants another championship at this level. If you win the world championship in Formula 1, you are the greatest thing in four wheels. You know, you can go off and be a world rally champion all you want, but you're not a Formula 1 world champion. They are the best drivers in the world, sat on that grid. And if you are the world champion, you are the greatest driver in the world. I don't care what anyone else says. I don't care whoever comes up and says whatever. Four-wheeled, yeah, I say four-wheeled because I know that there's a solid band of MotoGP fans out there. And, you know, that's riding. That's not driving. I think there's a difference. And,
that's mental. That's what that is.
Right. Yeah, huge amount of respect from the F1 podcast here.
Any sport where they wear out their... where some riders wear out their elbow pads before they wear out their knee pads... means that they are slightly unhinged. Tip my hat that I'm not wearing to them. They are epically mental.
Different breed.
Yeah. That's it.
Lots of new parts on the Lotus. Double DRS on Kimi's. Revised back rear aero package on Grosjean's car. They both seem to do a little bit and not maybe as much as they wanted. Probably a disappointing weekend ultimately for Lotus in the end.
I think they could have had a good weekend had it not been for the safety cars. I think I think their ultimate pace was actually not bad. And we didn't get a chance to see ultimately where they could have come. But then again, you could say that they probably wouldn't have been as high up as they were had there not been as many retirements. So
swings and roundabouts.
Indeed.
Caterham, we should just mention as well. Charles Peake, your man for most number two spots that are going. Or is he still? Not so much.
He looked deceptively good in a terrible car.
Have you jumped on the Bianchi bandwagon?
I've never really seen much from
him. Is that Max Chilton's car?
Sorry, that was brilliant. Michael made that comment and then his face just kind of said, oh, I'm so sad I said that.
The most interesting thing from wandering around Hingham backed Caterham's hospitality and things was Heikki Kovalainen, who was sitting upstairs there watching the GP2 action on Saturday afternoon. I asked him if he was okay and having fun, and no was his answer, and he looked incredibly glum. Which kind of made me think, A, why are you here? Because someone's obviously invited you. And I mean, that is clearly something's going to change.
He's still part of the Caterham team, isn't he? He's there helping them with their drivers and their race preparation.
Yes.
Obviously, he's got all that experience and the drivers they've got at the moment haven't.
Yes.
So he's there to help them in some way.
Yes.
But for his point of view, I think he's just loitering. He still wants to be there. He still wants to be visible. He still wants to be able to say, look, I'm still alive, I'm still about, let me race one of your cars, anyone. You know, I think that's the way he's looking at things.
Yeah, I agree with DT. He's a racer, you know, and you never lose the bug for it, so he wants to race in a car. And I think, in all honesty, looking at the performance of Caterham over this season, it might not be too far a stretch to think that he's sitting there thinking, I could do better than this, and I know I can do better than this. I mean, you know, he's a race winner. You can't say that about any of the rest of them.
Guido van der Garde is confident he has a watertight contract for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'd probably keep Guido van der Garde. I think he's I'm quietly impressed with him so far. I thought he would be a bit of a waste given how old he is versus, you know, some of the new talent, but he seems to have a fairly screwed on head. Plus he's Dutch, which is kind of cool. That's kind of cool talent.
Like a new age Jos Verstappen.
Yeah, you know, he's got a sense of humour and, you know, that sort of thing. He doesn't seem to have sort of like this sort of personality void that some drivers have when they come into Formula 1.
Probably need the sense of humour at the moment.
Yeah. But talk about drivers and sort of doing U-turns in terms of opinions and stuff. I've realised, especially after this weekend, that I clearly don't like Sergio Perez.
Really? Because I think we've kind of known that for the last few weeks.
But I mean, it was definitely confirmed this weekend when I whooped when his tyre blew.
I almost thought we were going to get through this podcast for the British Grand Prix without mentioning how utterly miserable McLaren were this week.
Well, this was about the time when I was just going to bring it up. They are now, although it's not on the list.
Yeah, don't look at the list. Come on, it's.
But I mean, they're now apparently officially concentrating on next year's car, whereas I think they've probably been doing that metaphorically for the last few weeks. They have pinched the chief designer from Sauber, whose name escapes me.
That bloke,
Morris Minor. Matt Morris is, of course, his name that's just suddenly sprung to me in my head. What is going on with McLaren?
It's just more of the same, isn't it? I think, you know, they've made a step forward, but it's not the step forward that I think they expected to make. Obviously, what they're getting in the wind tunnel and simulators and stuff isn't correlating with what they're getting out on track. And the biggest problem they've got is that whilst they might be making a step ahead, all the other cars are, you know, making big steps ahead. So they're sort of staying where they are. And, you know, to be sort of seriously trounced by the Toro Rossos means that, you know, this is a worse season than 2009.
The thing is, McLaren are supposed to turn these things around, aren't they? But we've had 8 races now with this car.
Mm.
And they've turned nothing round.
Yeah, I don't think they will. I don't think they'll want to. Well, as we said before, you know, they're now concentrating on next year. And I imagine in the back of their mind, they're probably looking forward to 2015 more than they are 2014.
Well, exactly. It's not going to be easy with Mercedes effectively just sort of hanging on for a year. Martin Whitmarsh under pressure, like genuine pressure, because of the things that have gone wrong, not just this season really, but even the last couple of years.
It's hard to say, because I don't think McLaren are the sort of company. It's not like you know, other organisations, other industries, where the person at the top has to be the fall guy regardless of whether or not he's at fault anyway. You know, I think McLaren will probably ask themselves, have we got someone better to do the job? And they say, but at the moment they probably haven't. The only way they could probably get someone better to take the helm is to take someone who's already doing it well at another team. which, you know, I don't think is going to happen because all the people that you'd want are all quite happy in their chosen teams.
Yeah, it's not like in other sports where you can go after, you know, a head coach or a manager or someone like that who's doing particularly well or who has a reputation for being, you know, doing very well and is currently with a team that's slumping. Mm. So then go after them and say, look at this opportunity we're giving you, we're going to blow it up and start from beginning, start from round one. You know, who wants to do that in Formula One? Because look at how long it takes. You say, you know, to be trounced by the Toro Rossos, 50-50 on that, because hats off to Toro Rosso, who have made steady and steady and steady improvements. And I think, in all honesty, the toughest thing to watch in Toro Rosso for the last few years has been their choice of drivers. Yeah. You know, Buemi was boring, Alguersuari was dangerous. I think they've settled very nicely on Vern and, you know, Jeff and Daniel are doing a great job.
Well, they had a very nice looking,
very strongly,
very nice looking car at the start of the season.
Did I not say in the pre-season?
You did. I believe you did.
I think you said to watch out for Williams.
That you also did say that.
I can't be right all the time.
Okay then, gents, driver and goat, team and highlight of the week. Let's start with your driver of the weekend, who excelled.
Webb's.
Yeah. I think Webber deserves a mention. I would also... Yeah, I think Webber and... Paul de Resta.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're going to mention Paul de Resta.
Definite shout.
Just go with the Australian contingent and say that Webber and Ricciardo both impressed.
Paul de Resta obviously didn't... It was really bizarre on Saturday because he somehow didn't eat enough food or lost like half his body weight.
It was quite hilarious. And, you know, and Vijay Mallya was quite open about that when they interviewed him and said, Paul was underweight. We did everything right. Paul was at fault.
But not before qualifying. He lost the weight. I mean,
yeah,
he did tweet after the race. He was stocking up on food to make sure that he didn't make the same mistake again. So who knows? After Lewis Hamilton, for me, surely, I would have said. The pole lap was a record pole lap for Silverstone. Ended up at the back of the grid after his blowout, still finished fourth.
Yeah.
Whereas Mark Webber was 14th because he couldn't start his car. So...
I don't think it's Mark's fault. I think they from what he was saying, it was the clutch bite point was all wrong, and because of that, he didn't get a particularly good getaway. So,
all right then. Well, I'm outvoted. We'll go with Webber. Team.
Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
I think it has to be. Yeah, because everyone else tripped up at some point, whether it was the tyres, which we'll get to.
Will we? Well, maybe we'll just not bother, leave it to everyone else.
The Pirelli have come out and said that it was a combination of different various types of abuse that teams were putting the tyres through. So they were either mounting them the wrong way, they were not inflating them enough, Pirelli have said it's the team's fault, basically. And if that's the case, I mean, we're not saying it is, we're not saying it isn't, but if that's the case, then none of the big teams that we would normally give this award to managed to avoid that. No. You know,
or Toro Rosso. It's Caterham it is.
Hey! Hey!
We didn't do a goat of the weekend.
Pirelli?
Yeah.
I think really have to be taking that.
All right, then. Let's get stuck into it now, shall we, just before we get onto a highlight of the weekend. The tyres. Three blowouts, although apparently Esteban Gutierrez did suffer similar. And no one's kind of saying it.
And Vettel had damage to his tyre.
He did. And I think Alonso and Rosberg were close to losing theirs as well. So it's a problem that was across everyone. Not all on... Some of it was on the rear right as well as the rear left, apparently. But because they were switching tyres from sides, which is a new practice that they push to presumably get as much out of the tyres as they can, switch the left to the right and vice versa, wasn't doing them any favours. I think Gary Anderson on the BBC did a really good job in going and looking at the kerb and seemingly pointing out where the damage could have been caused on those kerbs. But then I don't know how common that gap that he was pointing to, where the concrete was probably creating a sharp edge for the tyres as they went across it.
Well, the kerbs have been in place since 2009 at Silverstone. So I was reading a report by Derek Warwick. And they've been in place since 2009, they've never had a problem. But the question now is, okay, they've been there 4 years. There's a lot of racing happens at Silverstone, not just Formula One.
The curious thing for me is they're also the same kerbs that were there all weekend. And I mean, Perez had one blowout in FP3, I think it was, wasn't it? But It's not like in qualifying. I suppose they weren't on the tyres for very long.
And they weren't on the high fuel loads, especially in qualifying as well. I mean, the higher fuel load with more weight going over that, you're going to hit it a lot harder. It's going to cut a little bit deeper. It's going to bite into the rubber a bit more. I don't think many teams practice with a race load of fuel, even in FPs. No. So I think that's because all of the...
12 laps at a time.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, as you started this off with Ped, Pirelli have come out today. They're going to make some changes for Germany, more changes for Hungary, which are the two races before the summer break. They have said that the camber and the pressure on the tyres, which are effectively set-up issues from the teams, were too aggressive. Yeah. And that, coupled with the kerbs, is why the tyres failed. Yeah. They've effectively said it wasn't their fault, the tyres are safe, even though they're also making changes.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for Pirelli in a way, because there's been some like ridiculous Twitter fallout. Like, I saw a tweet from someone saying, after this I'm never buying Pirelli tyre again. I'm just thinking, you can't, you know,
overreaction on Twitter. I can't imagine that.
It's a complete overreaction.
We love Twitter, but my goodness me.
Yeah. Because it gives us the opportunity to see people remove the filter from their brain mouth function.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
But where do we stand now? I mean, driver after driver, apart from maybe the Lotus drivers, and again the teams that are happy with how things are because they think it benefits them, were saying this is too dangerous, this isn't good enough, and it's got to change.
I think we have to analyse the actual danger. I mean, you look at a modern Formula One car and look at some of the crashes these people can have without having any injury whatsoever. You know, look at Mark Webber a couple of years ago flipping the car, hitting a gantry, then just walking out. I don't think a burst tyre, you know, is really that much of an issue for these guys. You know, if it happens at high speed and they go off straight into a barrier or something, that could be potentially dangerous. But overall, I don't think it's huge.
And the debris they're saying is, you know, obviously, like Kimi, he had a bit of burning carbon fibre arrive in his cockpit. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's ideal, but I don't think it's this massive danger issue that everyone makes it out to be because of the way that things are in Formula One these days. You know, I'd have had more chance of injuring myself driving to the shops than I would.
We're not as good a driver as most of the people on the grid, DT.
Possibly.
Yeah. Although he's a much better driver than both of us.
It was interesting that Charlie Whiting, at one point, probably after John Eric Fearn's blowout, which was the third in eight laps, was contemplating the idea of stopping the race. I don't think he'd have been entirely surprised if he had a done, because I remember sitting there thinking, good grief, this is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it was dangerous, isn't it? I think it was just a combination of things. It all happened at once, and it, because it's unprecedented, it's never happened before, so we don't really know how to handle it. You know, do stop the race. If they did, there would have been absolute uproar from all the teams who thought that with the rest of the race to run, they would have been able to improve their position. Mercedes wouldn't have had a problem with it. You know, whoever was in front at the time, whoever would have stood on the top step of the podium would have come out and said, that's the safest decision to make, well done. It's all about Formula One is becoming more and more and more obviously about me, how is it good for me? So there are teams coming out and saying the tyres are unsafe, and in the same breath they're saying Mercedes only won that race because they had that secret test with Tyregate, completely overlooking the fact that Mercedes themselves had a tyre failure. So actually it's more about Rosberg's skill and deftness behind the wheel, and they managed to get to him in time and say, okay Nico, these are the problems that everyone's having with the tyres, you need to do this to avoid that happening. And Nico did a great job of that. Let's not take anything away from him. He managed the car that was underneath him. He drove what was in front of him. And that's what you need to do. But to say Mercedes had a blowout, but the secret test really helped them, and that's why they're winning, and this, that's absolute tripe. Unbelievable. But I think it is just a case of everyone's going to use this to their own advantage, and that's what they're going to do. No one... I mean, okay, as you know, if cars were blowing up left, right and centre, yeah, we'd have a safety issue. But ultimately, all people are going to use this for is to try and get a compound of tyre that they are going to be more successful on. Not the next race, not the next driver. They are the ones who are going to be more successful on it.
Probably why Christian Horner was saying, oh, the only logical way to solve this is to bring back last year's tyres, which I'm sure Red Bull would absolutely love to do. All right, then. Well, I'm sure we'll have more about this looking ahead to Germany. Highlight of the week.
Oh, for me, it's Kimi. Effecting an overtake, tyre blows up in his face, rubber all over the place, carbon fibre taking him apart in his own cockpit, casually completes the move. I mean, I know it was on Grosjean, and Grosjean had been told that Kimi was faster, but still, to be out there and have this tyre just blow up and still not panic, not hit the brakes, not get out of it, just casually, excuse me, Roman, and just drift across in front of him. To me, it was absolutely brilliant. And it was just so Kimmy. I think that was it. If anyone else had done it, I wouldn't have been that impressed, but it was just so Kimmy, just so smooth, so cool, so Iceman. Yeah. That was brilliant.
The one from Alonso was pretty good when he was behind Perez, and it was just, you know, he was properly close to the back of Perez and bang, and he just went, you know, just lightning fast around, just poof, out the way. Yeah, he went.
And of course, if he'd gone, if he'd actually gone to overtake him the other side, he would have been directly behind the tyre. So it was kind of a bit of luck as well that he wasn't, that he chose the other way to go.
But my highlight was pretty much everything that happened after the last safety car went in. You know, it was just a really good end to a pretty damn good race.
Very strong, very exciting.
Mine would probably be Mark Webber, you know, on the team radio at that point, being told, you know, we can get all these guys fresh rubber, just go for it. And he's like, yeah, we'll do it. And then he pretty much almost did.
Yeah, yeah. One, I think one more lap, one or two more laps, he would have had Rosberg.
And I think he'll be a major, major loss after this season. So we'll have to make the most of him while he's here. Gents, we're going to wrap it up there, I think. That was the British Grand Prix that was. Whew. Take a deep breath. We'll be back in a few days with our preview looking ahead to Germany and the Nürburgring. Until then, you can get a hold of us on Twitter, as always. Go on then, DT.
At Dave Tillier.
Brilliant. Ped.
At PedHD56.
And you can get at EDPF1 or me at Michael J. Bailey. That's it. Until next time, until pre-Germany, goodbye.